And welcome back to Midday, everyone. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks for joining us for our second hour. In this digital age, when millions of us compulsively check Twitter and Facebook to see what our peers and idols are up to, it's easy to feel jealous, unfulfilled, and unsatisfied. Keeping up with the Joneses no longer means just keeping an eye on the achievements and the salaries of those people who live next door or what they own. Now we can see what everyone we've ever known is up to at any given moment. In the era of oversharing personal information, it can be difficult to remain content with the life you lead. Moreover, the internet age allows us to constantly read news stories about violence, turmoil, climate change, doom, which makes achieving a healthy, peaceful mindset all the more difficult. Our guest this hour is clinical psychologist Robert J. Wicks. Robert J. Wicks is professor emeritus at Loyola University, Maryland. His previous books included Bounce, Living the Resilient Life, and Prayerfulness, Awakening to the Fullness of Life. He's been invited to speak to members of Congress, members of the military. He's with us today in Studio A because of a new book, Perspective, The Calm Within the Storm, which comes to us from Oxford University Press, one of our favorite publishers. This book stresses the importance of perspective on the life you have, the work you do, through a combination of personal anecdotes, clinical psychology, and some Eastern philosophy. Robert Wicks provides us with a step-by-step guide to achieve mindfulness, a word I'm going to ask him about, balance and calm, with the end goal of personal fulfillment and a healthy outlook on life. Robert Wicks, welcome to Midday. It's nice to have you with us.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Keep a good perspective on things, or think of the big picture. Look at the big picture. That's advice people give to us at times when we're feeling very stressed or down about something. Something awful has just happened, or something seems like something bad is seems like is about to happen. So some wise person, friend of yours, will say, keep things in perspective, and that's easier said than done.
Of course it is, and a lot of times when people say it, they say it in the wrong way at the wrong time, and you say, oh, please. All they're saying to me basically is get over it because you're making me feel bad. But if you look at perspective, it's got a great history, not only in psychology but in the classic literature. In the Talmud we see you do not see things as they are, you see things as you are. In the Christian New Testament, in Matthew 6:22, if your eye is good, your whole body will be good. Buddhists speak about it as the unobstructed vision, and Hindus in the Upanishads, a turning around in one's seat of consciousness. And even if you look at these leaders through the centuries, you can hear perspective breathing behind their words. For example, the prophet Muhammad, he once said, if you have enough money to buy two loaves of bread, buy only one and spend the rest on flowers. The whole sense of perspective is not new, but we've gotten a distance from it.
There's another phrase I want to ask you about, the pearl of great price.
Yes.
Or pearl of great price. What is meant by that?
What it means is that this is truly a great gift. It's not what we see and what we encounter that is dramatic as how we see it, how we encounter it. It's not the amount of darkness in the world that matters. It's not even the amount of darkness in the country. Or if you're a member of the military, I work with them, and not the amount of darkness in the military or the mission that matters. It's how you stand in that darkness. And that standing is perspective.
Perspective. What made you decide that this is what it was? I mean, you've written many books. You've counseled lots of people over the years. I've done a lot of reading, obviously. This seems like this almost like the magic bullet.
It is the magic bullet.
Or the lozenge, the magic lozenge that you need here. Take some perspective.
Yeah.
Or make sure you have it.
Well, the more it increases. I know in my practice was basically limited to helpers, physicians, nurses, relief workers. I did the psychological debriefing of relief workers evacuated from Rwanda during their genocide. And I also worked in Cambodia with helpers there. And recently, as I said, with the military, I was at the U.S. Air Force Academy speaking to their cadets. And there's a great interest in it. When I went to the academy, I said, well, how many am I going to speak to? And they said, 50. I said, well, how did you say 50? Well, that's all the classroom will hold. So I go the next day to go to speak, and they said, well, we've moved you. I said, where? To the theater. Well, how many are we talking? 900.
Wow.
Well, the difference is because people are interested in, you can't avoid the pain of life, but what you do with it by looking at it honestly and having a sense of openness, you can actually move into, even after trauma, into something we call post-traumatic growth, where we become deeper in ways that we couldn't have become deeper had the trauma not happened in the first place.
Psychologists, you write in your book, concerned that people think of psychology and psychiatry at moments when they need it as a cure for something, not as a way of getting some positive thinking in your life generally, but as, you know, in reaction to something bad that's happened to you.
Yeah, and that's a shame. And I think we've fed into that. Both psychology and psychiatry have been great repair shops. And we've, you know, constantly, we fix it. We act like life is acute. And spirituality would speak about life being chronic. I mean, we all have ups and downs. And as a matter of fact, when I look at one of the elements of perspective, it's not a psychiatrist or psychologist. It's a monk by the name of Thomas Merton. He was walking past a day room and in Kentucky where his abbey was, and he saw an old monk, 50 years a monk, and he looked depressed. And he went in. He said, "Brother, are you okay?" And he said, "Father Lewis, I'm not okay." He said, I'm losing my joy, my peace, I think my faith." Well, if he said something like that to somebody like me, you know, what do you say to a monk of 50 years? Merton smiled at the man, gently put his hand on his shoulder and said, "Brother, courage comes and goes. Hold on for the next supply." What he's saying to us is we need patience, we need perseverance, and yes, we need courage in today's world.
You know, I'd always want to be that person who could think of a great line, something to say, give some wise advice, be the sage who puts his hand on the shoulder of someone who's distressed, yeah, and come up with something like that.
Yeah,
it's but it is brilliant. Yeah,
yeah,
but Thomas Merton might have been saying those things when he was in his 20s.
Yeah.
Others may come to them when we're in older, 50s, 60s, 70s.
Yeah, it's right? Readiness. It's readiness.
It's readiness.
Yeah, sure.
I want to ask you about mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
If someone said to me, "Be mindful that, you know, the train leaves at 6 o'clock," that's a simple one. That's,
yeah,
I just got to be aware that I only have a certain amount of time to get to the train, right?
Right.
But mindfulness, can you help me with that?
Yeah, mindfulness is being in the present with your eyes wide open. And what it is it's experiencing all of life fully. And I think most people screen out life. And they live on the menus of life, what they would like, and they never taste the meals of life. And I think that we avoid it. We avoid formal mindfulness would be mindfulness meditation. And people always tell me, you know, well, I don't have time. Well, I remember when I graduated from Hahnemann Medical College with my psych degree, one of the first persons that came in to see me was a physician who had one of the busiest practices in the city. And he was having an affair outside of marriage. And I remember at the time, you know, giving him this great Freudian analysis of it. I think if he came in to see me now, my first reaction would be, "Where do you get the time?" I've gotten older, obviously.
Right.
But the reality is we have time for what we need. But people avoid silence and solitude. You know, Anne Lamott, the author, said, "My mind is like a bad neighborhood. I don't like to go there alone." And what she's speaking about is when you're in silence and solitude, you create a vacuum. And nature, as you remember from your science course from high school, abhors vacuums. So the preconscious, those thoughts lying just below the surface, come in and face us. And rather than just letting them move through us like a train to teach us, we either suppress them or we entertain them. Mindfulness teaches us to sit there and not go down three blind alleys. The first blind alley is arrogance, where we project the blame on others. The second is ignorance, where we condemn ourselves. And the third is discouragement, because we want immediate results. Mindfulness calls us to a spirit of intrigue. Be intrigued by ourselves, both our gifts, our growing edges, and the same with other people.
That takes some work.
It does.
That takes some work, because I could see also being in a state of what we might consider mindfulness,
yeah,
and being filled with all kinds of poisonous thoughts.
Yes.
All those things that you put off thinking about other people, about situations in life that you regret.
Right. Yeah. No, I think you're right. And
you
that's
could fill, you could fill it with poison. If
yeah.
You...
Oh, sure. And even if you do fill it with poison, a lot of that poison is really there anyway, below the surface. And the only memory that's going to hurt you is the one forgotten, because it's operating below the surface. If we can let it come to the surface and go through us, then we can begin to address it. And that's what cognitive behavioral therapy does. It has us pick up our dysfunctional cognitions, the ways we think, perceive, and understand. That's what narrative therapy does when it says you own the copyright to your own story. And both of those areas I put in the perspective book, because you can't just simply say to people, have a good perspective. You need to have something that they can look in and chew on, and right. Hopefully it's there.
Right. Well, we're going to talk some more about those elements as the hour goes on here. I want to invite our listeners to call in and talk about some of these issues with Robert Wicks, the author of Perspective, The Calm Within the Storm. 410-662-8780. Our toll-free long-distance number, 866-661-9309. You can send us comments or question by email, midday@wypr.org. And I guess what I was getting at before is you want people to get to a positive place by experiencing solitude, silence, being alone.
Mm-hmm.
And, my comment was that you could spend that time filling your mind with all these poisonous thoughts that you put off thinking about the rest of the time. That's not what this is for, right?
No, but the danger you point out is a common danger, because people don't either have somebody to guide them or don't look at the total picture in the book. This isn't sort of an instant kind of thing. It's a slow process where we begin to enjoy being with ourselves. I remember treating a patient, one of the first patients, and my supervisor in Philadelphia, analyst Franklin West, psychiatrist, he said, Dr. Wicks, you've presented the pathology wonderfully. He said, but, if you don't do more than this, you're going to do all the work. And I said, well, why? He said, because you're the only person with talents in the room. And later on, we saw this field as positive psychology. Positive psychology is not cortisone over your errors and mistakes. What it says is have a more balanced picture. If you can get in touch with your talents, it's those very talents that will help you with the difficulties that you're experiencing in the other part of your personality.
And you found ways to reach them through meditation,
yeah,
through times in silence, solitude?
Yeah, I think that what happens in silence and solitude and being wrapped in gratitude is we begin to have a perspective. We tend to look outside our door and see people who have more than us. We tend to look in our hearts and only see the negative side. Balance is what's suggested when we have these quiet periods, so that we can take a breath. We can begin to realize, people just have motivation and they try. It's like getting rid of a boomerang. If you just throw it, as hard as you throw it, meditation and mindfulness and perspective gives you a chance to set the boomerang down and step over it in the right way.
Robert Wicks, our guest on Midday. We'll take our first break here and come back and talk some more. 410-662-8780 if you'd like to join us. His book is Perspective, The Calm Within the Storm. I have to ask him about the subtitle when we get back. A short break. Psychologist Robert Wicks, our guest in this hour of Midday. Professor Emeritus from Loyola University, Maryland. His book, Perspective, The Calm Within the Storm. And when I saw the subtitle, actually the title, it all worked together for me nicely. Perspective, Calm Within the Storm. I think I understand that. Yeah. I think the people I admire and envy in life are those who can pull that off, who have it already, like as you were saying in the beginning of the show. It's there over their shoulder. It's an aura that they have. They remain poised. They don't seem to get upset or rattled easily. They seem to have some wisdom that they can share. And it's usually an older person. I don't know if I remember meeting too many people in their 20s when I was in my 20s or 30s who had this. It seems like it's something that comes with age. It sounds almost like a cliche. But so what do you think about that?
Well, I think you're right in the sense that it's like resilience. The resiliency range is determined by DNA, genetics, and early experiences, and it's motivation and knowledge and hopefully wisdom that expands that range. And it's the same thing with being, you know,
and having perspective.
Yeah, and being calm. I mean, like, for example, I was getting ready to give a talk to family residents, and I love them. They're just wonderful. And I got there, and they said, oh, by the way, which is the worst phrase you could hear as a speaker. And then I said, yes, we're also going to include the surgical residents. And they can be a tough group. And my first reaction was to get, you know, oh, gee, you know. And then as soon as I get that, I do three things. I lean back. I reflect on it, I reappraise it so that I can renew. So I lean back and I said, look, I'm prepared for this. They need the space. They don't need me concerned about my ego.
Right.
So I went and I did it. And one of the nicest things
happened. Was it a hospital?
Yeah, it was a hospital. I work with a lot of healthcare systems. And I got a call from the head of HR several weeks later. And she said, you know, I'm sorry I wasn't at your talk. My daughter was in the hospital. And I said, I'm sorry. I hope she's okay. And we chatted a bit. And then she said, but an unusual thing happened. I said, what? After your talk, some people came to me and said that there was such peace in the room. And it was such a reinforcement for me because it gave me a chance to really lean back from the ego and do that. And it's not hard, especially for somebody like me. A number of months ago, my daughter, who's a social worker, works with severely injured returning Iraqi and Afghani vets, said to my two granddaughters over dinner, what are your signature strengths? What are your gifts that you're going to put at the service of others? And they're used to her pronouncements. So so they went on this list. They loved it. And then my son-in-law wasn't saying anything. He finally said, well, what about humility? And the youngest said, well, what exactly is it? And he said, well, get the dictionary. And he read out the description, and he said, now, who do you think of when you think of humility? And all three of them, my two granddaughters and my daughter, piped in out, Mom. And he said, well, what about Pop-Up? And they said, no, not Pop-Up.
No, not you, but their grandmother.
Yeah, because she has that sense. I need to lean back more to have that sense. And what I say to people is, you each have a given. Make the most of the given that you have.
You know, it's part of the reason why we choose to have you on the show and do shows like this from time to time with psychiatrists, psychologists, to talk about these things. Because you do feel better. At least I feel better afterwards. Or at least you've given me something to think about that's not related to the news necessarily, or an issue that's before Congress or something like that.
Yeah.
It's not work-related. And it makes me mindful of the fact that I am not mindful as much as I should be. You know, to take a time out, take a long walk, and actually meditate a little bit.
Sure.
Ponder something without a lot of noise in the room, with others there for conversation, just to be with yourself.
Well, one of the things, just before you leave that area, is hopefully this book will do one thing for people. Not only gain perspective, but it'll have them go truly take a walk, not take a think. Because people leave and they go to it's lunchtime, nice chance to take a walk. And I love walking through the city because there's so much great energy and stuff.
Yeah.
Or in the country where you feel that sense of peace. But instead, you wind up in a cognitive envelope thinking about things rather than experiencing your own life. It's sort of a shame.
410-662-8780. Questions for psychologist Robert Wicks, author of Perspective, The Calm Within the Storm. Mari or Mary? I'm sorry, Mari?
Hello. Do you mean Maya?
Maya. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
okay.
That's okay. I have a question for Dr. Wicks. I think it would benefit the listeners to hear how mindfulness meditation can also help people control their thoughts, even to the point where they can change the automatic pathways in their brains and their automatic reactions to situations and people.
That's a good question. And what it does is, what it touches on is one of meditation's great gifts is it allows us to have distance from our own thoughts. It allows us to move back from it so that it doesn't have the immediate power. Most people have a thought that they don't not even aware of, and they react. What meditation allows is a distance so that rather than reacting, you lean back and reflect, and you can respond to those thoughts. as if they are not necessarily true and need to be challenged. I think we have so many assumptions that we don't realize. And meditation allows all these things to come to the surface. One Buddhist said, when you meditate, it's like sitting in the middle of a room and opening up the windows and the doors. It's in Jack Kornfield's wonderful book. And you'll have all kinds of visitors. And he says, just sit there and watch all these visitors. You know, don't entertain them. Don't suppress them. Let them move through the room.
You list in your book What Mindfulness Is Not.
Yeah.
Mindfulness is not trying to relax.
Right.
That's a common idea that people have, right?
Yeah.
Breathing and relaxing.
Yeah.
Mindfulness is not a religion. Mindfulness is not about transcending ordinary life. Talk about that one a little bit, would you?
Well, mindfulness actually allows us to be more in touch with life because you're present. You know, you're really there. That's why I use that analogy of the menu and the meal. I mean, some people who enjoy that don't have that much financially are enjoying this frankfurter or this salad to the ultimate that just cost a couple of bucks. And there are other people who are, you know, have this gorgeous menu of the meal that they've never enjoyed. I think the sense of presence in your own life, you know, James Joyce said of one of his characters, Mr. Duffy lived a short distance from his body. That's the way we live a lot of the time. We're either in the silver casket of nostalgia or preoccupied with the future. We're not home.
Mindfulness is not emptying the mind of thoughts. You've kind of gone over that.
Yeah.
Mindfulness is not difficult.
No, it's very simple.
Mindfulness is not escape from pain.
No, it's facing everything directly.
So if you're sitting in the middle of the room and all the doors and windows are open, pain might come in.
Oh, sure. It not right. only might, it will come in. But how you face it. I once was in New Zealand, and there was a priest that I was riding around with, and he was a young priest. And I asked him the same question I asked physicians or nurse. Anytime somebody's out about a year from their training, I said, any, you know, teachable moments, any special? And he said, oh, yeah. He said, I was called to the hospital. And I got in the waiting room there, and I saw this woman who was really pale, and the man was crying. And I said, what's the matter? And she said, well, we gave birth to twins, but one was born dead and one born alive. And he said, we went down to the morgue then, and we stood around the little shrouded body, and we prayed and we cried. I said, what'd you do then next? He said, it was like a resurrection experience. We went upstairs to the neonatal intensive care unit. And we opened up the door, and it was a totally different scene. It was bright. It was cheery. People were laughing. And we stood around the incubator, because this is a few years ago. And he said, we cried, and we prayed again, but this time we cried tears of joy. And I said, well, what was the lesson? He said, I don't think I could have cried those tears of joy if I didn't first cry those tears of sadness. We need to look at life directly with gentleness and clarity. If we're going to really experience everything.
Robert Wicks, our guest on Midday today in the second hour of our show, 410-662-8780. If you'd like to join our conversation, I have a question for psychologist Robert Wicks. His book from a few years ago, Bounce, Living the Resilient Life, and now this one, Perspective, The Calm Within the Storm. And I started off the hour mentioning how the term perspective is used often in moments of stress or distress or you know, you're pondering your life and it's looking kind of grim, and someone mm-hmm. says, well, you got to keep some perspective here or get some perspective. Let me give you some perspective on this. Or and you said it usually means get over it.
Yeah.
That's when we use it that way.
Yeah, Henry Thoreau once said, if you see someone coming to do good for you, run for your life. people...
But when someone give you that particular advice, aren't they trying to say, look at the big picture?
Well,
You know, your little pain compared to the pain of the world, pain of others, or you're no different than anybody else.
Yeah.
What you're going through, others have experienced. I mean, that... I think people are trying to help each other with that phrase.
Yeah, but I think the first thing you need to do is acknowledge people's pain. It's their pain, you know, and sometimes it's hard to do that. I know when I would take a trip to Cambodia, and see the suffering, and then I'd come back to my own practice and hear people dealing with what they deal with here.
Yeah.
You know, I'd have to keep
my first world problems.
Yeah, right? And I learned to keep my mouth shut for a couple of weeks until I could, you know, reacclimatize myself to what we have in the first world. But I think you have to recognize people are suffering. But the question is, they deserve more. And if they deserve more, they need to move beyond the suffering. And they move beyond the suffering when they begin to recognize that pain is not the final word. And perspective helps us in that way.
So you're using perspective in a completely different way.
Yeah, I think so.
From my understanding,
I think I'm using perspective as a healthy way to view the world so that you can see it clearly, receive the most joy from it, and share it freely with others. And that's the calm within the storm. I think people get lost in trying to help their family, their friends, and others because they focus on success. Perspective has you focus on faithfulness. If you're personally and professionally faithful, you do what you can, then you need to let go. And perspective allows us to let go where success doesn't.
That's very interesting. You know, one of the hard things to let go of is just daily life.
Yeah.
Chores, struggles, bills, commitments, responsibilities, the news. Mm-hmm. The news could be, as it is today, you know, kind of grim and scary sounding with the White House report on climate change, that those big things that we have no control over, and then the little things that are sort of eaten away at us all
sure.
the time.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Pulling your head out of that is difficult. It's challenging. You're saying you have to do this as part of your daily exercise.
Oh, yeah. You're making a case for my point. You're saying, look at all the stuff that goes around. And that's why I suggest that people debrief themselves at the end of a day, that they lean back and that they let the stuff move through them. When I was working with the physicians and the nurses at Walter Reed Army Hospital, one of them said to me, he says, you know, can I just speak to you for a second? I said, yeah. He said, I'm just tired of cutting off people's legs. He said, you know, if I could just take a gallbladder out once in a while. He says, and when I go home, they don't understand. And I said, well, what happens? Well, I try to get some distance by hitting a few golf balls upstairs, and my spouse says, you don't care. And I said, well, first of all, you're being contaminated. Psychologically, when you're close to people that are suffering, you not only catch their colds and flus, you catch their sense of despair. You need to decontaminate yourself so you don't suffer and you don't contaminate your family. He said, well, how do I do that? I said, first, take a little mindfulness time. Take a short walk through the hospital or, you know, take a ride. Don't go directly home. Just take a little longer ride and let this stuff move out of you. And then tell your wife when you get in the house, say, look, I'm going to go upstairs and change my clothes to just symbolically let go of that work. And I'm going to hit a few golf balls to calm down because you deserve better. You deserve my full mindful attention, and I can't give it to you the way I am. Mm. So mindfulness is not just about us. It's about those that we live with and relate to. Yeah.
What about what I was saying at the beginning of the show about the digital age mm-hmm. and how we have all this connectedness? We've networked. We're overstimulated. We have too much information almost that we get from others. Facebook, Twitter, we know what our friends and not-so-friendly friends are doing all the time. It can foster envy of others, wondering why you're not... where why your life is not fuller, busier.
Sure.
All those things. This age seems to be fraught with even more of the things that distract us from what you're talking about.
Yeah. And that's why I put the opening chapter, I entitled it Alone Time. And that's when your time in silence, solitude, and reflective within yourself when you're in a group. What's happened now is because of anxiety and habit, people fill every space of alone time with checking Facebook and Twitter, and that's fine. Set yourself a particular time to check those things and check them, enjoy them, do whatever you want. But also look at the crumbs of mindfulness and alone time that are already in your schedule. All right. So the time, for example, just before you get out of bed, time in the shower, maybe time walking somewhere, Take the time in the, you know, time say, during lunchtime. And instead of constantly filling those with things, allow the space to be there so that you could take a breath. Now, the first reaction is going to be is you're going to feel nuts because you're not used to taking a breath.
Right.
So with gentleness and clarity, just begin to take that time and enjoy being with yourself. And as I said, any book that you pick up on mindfulness will give you some good tips. You don't need anything special. It's very simple. It's not easy because we have a habit of filling our days, but it is simple.
Perspective is the title of Robert Wicks's book, the psychologist Robert Wicks, and Professor Emeritus from Loyola University, Maryland, our guest in this hour of midday. Perspective, the calm within the storm. If you'd like to join our conversation, please give us a ring, 410-662-8780. I'm curious if anyone of our audience has sort of adopted some of these ideas already. What do you get out of meditation? How often do you do it? What do you think of the word mindful and mindfulness? Would you say that's an adjective someone can use to describe you these days? And what got you there and why did you get there? 410-662-8780. This is Midday. And welcome back to Midday. Dan Roderick's here with Robert Wicks, author of Bounce, Living the Resilient Life, and now Perspective, the Calm Within the Storm, how to gain and keep, maintain perspective. And we've gone over that definition a couple of times now. I'm interested in some other aspects of your book here. Seeing ourselves more completely, self-awareness, accurate self-image, having an accurate self-image.
Yeah.
I think most people go through life trying to figure out who they are, right? And then you finally arrive at a place where you say, well, this is who I am. Accept me. I have to accept me. This is the way I am.
Yeah.
Again, something that comes with time.
Oh, yeah, it does. It does take, because we need to have enough experiences and hopefully enough of humility to begin to see our total self. But the problem that I experience is that it's not the people's shortcomings that they're not aware of. They're not aware of their gifts. And I've been surprised at that. I'll sit with somebody for 5 minutes and I get the feeling that I think more of them than they think of themselves.
That's interesting.
That's sort of sad.
It is. Well, yeah. A certain person will react to a compliment, say.
Yeah.
Not really know how to take that.
Yeah.
Didn't seem to have an awareness that they have this skill or talent.
Yeah. Yeah, because it makes them nervous. It's in some way it doesn't feel right. And if you look at what you have positive as gifts you've been given, why wouldn't you enjoy them? And why wouldn't you share them? I mean, and I think if you have gifts that you enjoy fully and you share them, I remember one woman came into my practice once, a very religious woman, and she was sent by her children. The children said, you need to see our mother. And I said, well, why? Because we'll kill her if you don't see her. So I said, what seems to be the problem? And they said, she's always trying to help us, and she's a worrier. And the woman is such a nice woman, our mom. And so anyway, she came in, and I used some cognitive behavioral stuff with her, and she got somewhat better, but I thought I need to go through the religious side. So she came in one day and I said, you know, you seem to be very prayerful. She said, yeah. I said, but there's a prayer you leave out. And I'm puzzled. She said, what prayer? I said, well, let me do it via story. If you give a little girl a gift at Christmas, the best thank you she can give you is, I mean, she could say thank you and that's fine. But the best thank you would be to enjoy the gift and share it freely with her friends. Isn't that the same with your life that God has given to you, that you enjoy it fully and share it freely with your friends, expecting nothing in return?
How does that give you greater perspective?
Well, because what happens is all of a sudden you begin to recognize that you do have real gifts and you do have real growing edges. As a matter of fact, your growing edges are often your gifts that become exaggerated under certain situations. So for somebody like me, maybe I'm enthusiastic.
Mm-hmm.
And when I get anxious and ego-filled, maybe I'm have mouth will travel, you know,
right.
And intrusive. So if people can begin to recognize their gifts and when they become distorted, then they can recognize situations that they find they're uncomfortable in. And when you know those situations, you can learn a lot from them.
410-662-8780. I'd like that our listeners are calling to join in this conversation, ask questions of Robert Wicks. Joe in Baltimore, we'll go to you next. Hi.
Hi. I know Bob from my days at CRS.
Ah.
I worked there as a training person.
Catholic Relief Service?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had a couple things. One is I work a lot with mediation, and I think that contamination thing has really gotten to me. But recently, Merton is a big – I read Merton every day. I have this belief that you have to read good words to think good thoughts, do good deeds. I guess that's an exercise that you would probably agree with.
Sure.
But the other thing is the other day Merton talked about his problem wasn't – he was unaware, and that was the thing. And I guess if I'm trying to equate it with mindfulness, it sounds like it's pretty much the same thing. And so I've been really focusing on that last few days of trying to be aware of everything that's going on, and I guess in your mindfulness language of just letting it be and not trying to do anything with it, but just let it happen.
So what question has this led you to?
Well, the question is that how do you – I guess it's – I'm sort of thinking, what do I need to do to keep doing it? And I've got some of my own answers. Is I got to stay aware because mm-hmm. I recently, a couple of years ago, I was talking to a priest friend of mine. He said he retired, and I said, well, now I can get closer to God.
Uh-huh.
He said, well, not closer, more aware.
Well,
so
Joe,
what are the practices? You know,
yeah.
What are the things you do?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think Joe, what you've got is the spirit of unlearning. Unlearning. Is in line. Let's use Merton since you like him. Merton said in mindfulness, don't sit in the silence waiting for God to speak. Instead, let the silence speak for God. And what Merton was speaking about in that instance is often people go into mindfulness with their own set of values and they want to hear those values affirmed. And what he said is if you're going to be apophatic, that's the word he used, empty yourself rather than cataphatic, fill yourself with something, then you need to be willing to see everything with a sense of openness. And I think that knowing you from your fine work at CRS, you had that openness and you want to add to it. So I would say just keep walking. And don't get concerned if you see things that are unpleasant.
I'm a little concerned about his phrase, be aware of everything.
Right.
That sounds like a load. That sounds like a burden.
Well, it's a burden if you begin to judge everything as negative or positive. If you judge it as it's there already anyway, so why not see it and see what you can do with it, then it's not a burden.
Okay. To me, I keep thinking of the news and understanding what's going on in life. Be aware of everything. Be aware of how my friends feel. Be aware of birthdays. Be aware of this and that.
I see what you're saying. I see.
That sounds like a pile to me.
Yeah, that is. That is. In that way, it is. Yeah. But I think that what it's like one person who was in the military said to me, you know, he says, I've been through so much. And he said, I keep getting re-traumatized when I keep watching this news. And he said, you said something to me that helped me. And I said, well, what was it? Because you never remember what. He said, you said, shut off the TV. And I think that we need to prune our concerns rather than allow them to completely take over us and become worries.
Len in Parkville, you're on next with Robert Wicks. Hi.
Good afternoon. One thing in my life I've found to be very helpful is to do a meditation retreat.
Mm-hmm.
So you do it for like 7 days or 10 days or 2 weeks with somebody who's experienced, and it really can deepen your practice of awareness, which I think, you know, mindfulness is the practice of awareness.
Right.
And Len, this is a physical retreat. You actually go away somewhere?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. In my case, I go to Canada. There's a... You know, it's a place where I go. It's out in the country. I think it's very helpful to get away from the daily life
mm-hmm.
Routines and really work a practice in a beautiful environment, you know, out in the country, maybe in a cabin somewhere. And it's really nice if you can get your meals, you know, you get good, healthy food.
Sure.
And it just serves as a kind of awareness. That allows you to come to yourself, really.
And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get, I think you're right and right on, and I'm glad you do it. And I wish more people could do it. A lot can't. So what I try to get them to do is take whatever time away they can. whether it's during the day a few moments, whether it's, you know, in the evening for 15 minutes, so that they can really grow to love that time, so that they, when the opportunity does present itself, they can go more deeply as you do. For some, they never do it, and that's fine. They get what they can get. But I want to people to realize it's within all our possibilities.
Jenny in Catonsville, welcome to Midday. You're on with Robert Wicks.
Hi. I was just wondering if he had any tips for parents with little time alone and how they can be more mindful, like the parent can be more mindful, but also how they can help the children to become more mindful, especially small children, mm-hmm. especially if the parent exhibits a lot of anxiety and is worried about passing that on to the child, which, of course, is a double-edged, you know, catch-22.
It is a catch-22 because then we get anxious about our anxiety. So one of the things that I suggest that people do is, first of all, children tend to be naturally mindful themselves. They're present. I remember this mindfulness expert was once riding with his daughter, and they hit a came to a train track, and then one of the old freights came through, you know, the 100 car, and he went, "Oh my gosh!" And his daughter said to him, "Oh, aren't we lucky? We didn't miss the train." So he said, "Oh boy, you know, she's teaching me." So the sense is, children tend to be in the present with what they're at. They're not thinking of the past or the future. Parents, though, being mindful, if you're anxious, pick up the fact that that anxiety is the negative side of your passion for what is good. And focus first on the fact that you are concerned about doing things right and having, making a contribution. So first, give yourself a break. Lean back and see the positive side. Second, when you catch yourself doing that, seek ways to make it a shorter period by recognizing the need for a few breaths, and the reality of sitting alongside your child is much more important than correcting your child, because modeling is much more powerful than teaching from the lips. So that's about all I could tell you about that.
I want to raise another word here, gratitude.
Yeah.
Gratitude as an ingredient to developing healthy perspective.
Yeah, David Stendhal Rass once said, the problem with us is we leave the house with a list, and on that list is what we'll be grateful for. And he suggests throwing away the list. But it's very hard to do because society is really out to sell us something. They sell us, you need more. Well, once you have more, you need more. You need different. Well, once you have different, it's the same. Well, you need perfect. Well, if there was a perfect thing, we would lose ourselves, and it's called symbiosis. It's not good. So what is it? I think that gratefulness allows us to begin to recognize the dangers of what I'd call spiritual Alzheimer's. And what it means is, it means we lose sight of the good even in the darkness. Vietnamese monk Thich Nhat Hanh said, during the war, we were so busy helping the wounded that we forgot that Vietnam has a great fragrance at night. So busy helping that we forgot that in the country, we could smell the scent of mint, coriander, and thyme. And composer Arthur Rubinstein followed that. He said, happiness can only be felt when we don't set any conditions. And when we're open in the way, all of a sudden we begin to notice things. Say, I want people to have more. Not so much add something, but see what's already there. So a change in the seasons doesn't mean simply a change in the clothes, but appreciating that the seasons is only something beautiful if we have the eyes to see those changes. And so
that's very interesting.
Yeah.
Because when you say gratitude, yeah, immediately you can think of a list, right?
Yeah.
You can, the reasons that I'm grateful.
Yeah.
But you're way beyond that.
Well, yeah, because what happens is we get gratefulness tolerance, and we constantly need different, more, and this and that. And what I'm saying is it's foolish. There's so much there for you. I mean, when people take a ride, they put themselves in a cognitive envelope of worry. And you might say, well, shouldn't they be concerned about difficulties? That's not concern. It's preoccupation. They're at places they may never be, instead of enjoying the beautiful day. So I want people to have more, and gratitude will really help people have more.
Let's take another caller. Chris out in Boonesboro. Thanks for calling in at Midday, Chris.
You're welcome. I really appreciate this topic. One of the things I wanted to add I'm a retired flight attendant, and on the heels of 9/11, I became aware of mindfulness and meditation. And one of the ways it has really helped me to achieve peace, contentment, gratitude, calm, is to notice when I struggle with overwhelming emotions or anxiety, is to notice with curiosity and without judgment what's happening in my body. For instance, my hands might tremble, my heart might beat faster, I might perspire. And just with curiosity, it takes me out of my head and away from the thoughts. And it brings me into my body, which is sort of a free space for a little while. And just with curiosity, I pay attention and I notice to what's going on, and pretty soon it passes.
Mm-hmm.
And that has spilled over into many areas of my life, and it's really made a huge difference.
Well, Chris, you're right on the target. I mean, Dan does this curiosity with all kinds of topics and people who come in to see him. You're doing it with yourself, not with judgment, but with a sense of intrigue. And that in itself dissipates the emotions that we're overwhelmed by. If people would only attend to them, there's a fascinating thing. If you look at something directly, eventually it gets smaller. Yeah.
Say that again.
If you look at something directly in your life, eventually it gets smaller. It just can't stay at that intensity.
Right.
Physiologically,
right.
You're unable to do it.
Kevin in Glen Burnie, you're on with Robert Wicks. Hi.
Hi, I really like this topic. It really relates to my job as a sign language interpreter. I specifically specialize in interpreting in the medicine, in the hospital and medicine field. And so you see a lot of variety of things happening, and some of it is extremely heartbreaking. And you see a lot of oppression still by deaf people, of deaf people. And so what we're taught when we go in through the interpreter training program is they put an emphasis on aftercare, taking care of yourself after, because and trying to get rid of these things and out of your system, try to detach.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that really works for me, because I think it's different for everybody else, is I actually plan and schedule and set up downtime, whether it's going out with friends or whatever, that totally distracts me from my day.
Well, that's perfect, because what you're doing is you're scheduling what's important, something that people don't see as important. Perfect.
Well, thank you for being here today, Robert Wicks. It was a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you.
And give us a lot to think about. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Robert Wicks, psychologist and professor emeritus of Loyola University, Maryland, is... 50th plus book, Perspective, The Calm Within the Storm, is published by Oxford University Press. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, everybody. See you again soon.
Midday senior producer is Nikki Gamer. The producer and director is Jonathan Ahrens. The associate producer, Michael Himowitz. Our interns are James Daly, Tom Cartaxo, and Michelle Richardson. Music produced by Jeff Truman in High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcast and live streaming available at WYPR.org. Dan Rodrick's column appears in the Baltimore Sun. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.